It is the Budweiser Sports Forum. Phil Jackman in studio today. I'm Nasty Nestor Aparicio. Phil, of course, former columnist for the Evening Sun, longtime sports writer at the paper, and talked about a variety of different issues getting into things. I don't want to use today's newspaper as an example or you know, any
But you will.
No, but I'm not going to, because today, I mean, obviously you're here, and one of the reasons you're here is to fill our airtime, because February is the slowest month of the year, and it's a great month to look at everything that's not happening this weekend or last weekend, but just take on an issue. We're going to do
well, there's too much of that in sports, number one. The typical sports fan cannot wait for something to happen. Why? What's the big rush? You know what I'm talking about?
Can't wait for a game to happen?
Anything. What do you... Hey, I remember there's a guy who did a radio show in town for years around here, and in the middle of winter, somebody would call up and say, what do you think the Orioles' pitching rotation would be? And he'd do 20 minutes on it. Why don't we wait until the pitchers go to spring training in February? Why don't we suffer through those spring training stories during my... Why don't we wait for things to happen?
It's important, I think, for the marketing of sports from... If I owned a sports franchise, and the NFL has become phenomenal at this, is making it a year-round sport. The NFL plays a total combination. If you're a fan of the Ravens, they have played 48 hours of football the entire year. Really 16, but they stretch an hour football game over 3 hours.
Right.
So they have played 48 hours of football in an entire year. And we spent 365 days a year here dissecting things, because they figured out that having the middle of the week off is a good thing. They figure that having an injury report is a good thing, not only for them. They figured out, even though they'll never say it, that gambling is a good thing. And that waiting on the free agent period is a good thing, and having these college combines and the draft and the mini camps, it's a year round thing. Just like baseball, when you started covering baseball, nobody thought about baseball in November, December, did they? Winter meetings, that was it for a weekend, right? The winter meetings was it.
Yeah, what you hope to do is hot stove league is what they used to call it.
And where did that expression come from? You have any idea? Hot stove.
Yeah, a bunch of guys gathered around a hot stove during the winter time.
And talk baseball.
Dreaming of summer.
Okay.
And but since baseball was the sport, you know, you wouldn't remember it, but the biggest sports were, and it wasn't that long ago.
Boxing, horse racing, and baseball.
Not horse racing. No.
No?
College football, baseball, and boxing. And that probably got almost, that went into the 50s. Nobody cared about pro. Well, pro basketball was fairly new in 1946. Pro football was still, you know, those ruffians playing on Sunday afternoon. And
pro football didn't take off to the early 70s, really take off, correct?
No, 50s. I'm not going to say the championship game. I mean, that opened it up. But pro football was very important in the major cities in the country, because there was no college football. When you think about it, New York's not a college football town. Washington... Detroit, Philly. L.A. was
Pittsburgh,
the only one. They had the two big teams. No, Pittsburgh was pretty good, and the Penn State was out in the sticks, and the University of Pittsburgh.
Cleveland had Ohio State. Right.
Chicago was okay.
Because of Notre Dame.
Because of the Big Ten and Notre Dame. But for the most part, any other city, it was no big deal.
Well, Chicago's an interesting town altogether, because people from the Midwest grow up on a farm in Iowa or grow up in the backwoods of Wisconsin. They all want to be in Chicago. So when you go to Chicago, any sports bar to this day you go to Chicago has all the Big Ten helmets around.
Right.
And there are bars that are Illinois bars or Michigan bars.
You know what's amazing about it? Northwestern's a very small school and a very, very good school. But it's slightly amazing that they're not better year after year. Now, they say, well, these kids can't get... There have to be a lot of good, smart football players around. Chicago, for instance, high school football is not great, but it's awfully good. And they support so many teams in the Big Ten and Notre Dame. And they say, well, Northwestern can't get... Well, Chicago did. University of Chicago was one of the original members of the Big Ten. I think it was a Big Nine then or something or other. Until Robert M. Hutchins just took him out of the business and got out.
Well, Stedman's quote about Baltimore being the first great pro football city was that there was that the Colts were the college team for Baltimore.
Exactly.
And other places, they caught on to that.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that in New York, where they had the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Yankees, more of a baseball type of thing, that other cities adopted that, and that Roselle sold that. That, hey, in Buffalo, the Bills are your team.
Why did the Kansas City Chiefs leave Dallas?
I have no idea.
Nobody cared.
Okay.
You know, because it was college football then.
SMU and Texas and Texas
A&M. Well,
the right.
Southwest Conference.
Sure.
And that was a league under its own. If do you remember, did you read the book or see the movie Junction Boys?
I did not, but...
You got to read it. It's fantastic. It's when Bear Bryant left Kentucky, went down to Texas A&M. He's out in the middle of nowhere, and he drags these 110, 111 kids out to Junction City, Texas, and puts on the worst...
Boot camp
type yeah. thing. 35 guys come back. And all they're worried about, they were 1-9 that first year. And by the time those guys are seniors, 35, there was probably 16 of them were seniors, they win the Southwest Conference. As you're reading this book, it's by the announcer down there, Jim somebody about.
Was the movie any good?
Yeah, for made for television, it was.
I mean, it
Berenger played the part.
Yeah, it was made in Australia, and I mean, it, 3 months of promoting the damn thing. I never did. Well, I didn't watch it on principle because I got sick of hearing about it.
Well, read the book because Bear Bryant, you know, Bear started here, and I started telling people that, and they say he did. Yeah, he was at University of Maryland, and he left there, and he went to Kentucky, and Kentucky was as good as anybody in the country. This is around the time of Babe Riley. And I always thought it was an apocryphal story. The thing about...
Was Rupp there at the time?
Yeah.
So at what a university that must have
at
been.
The awards, at the awards ceremony, Schnellenberger played for them. And the other end was Steve Meilingen, and Perilli was the quarterback. And they were terrific. The two best teams in the Southeast Conference at that time were Kentucky and Tennessee. Johnny Majors was down at the Majors brothers. There's about six of them were at Tennessee, but they were the strength of the whole thing. And at the awards banquet at the end of the year, I thought somebody made this up. Baron Rupp got a Cadillac, and what's his name? Bear Bryant got a lighter. So he's out of there. So he goes down to Texas A&M, and in 4 years, picks them up to the point where Alabama wants him. Now, Alabama had been down for a long while, and you can't be down in Alabama football because, you know, but anyway, and that's where he went to school. You know, he's an Arkansas guy. Ironically, what happened this year, Gene Stallings did the same thing. He was one of his best players on the Junction Boys. He's at Texas A&M with John Crow and Charlie Kruger and guys like that. That's why they got good, because Bear Bryant could get any kid to come. If you can get anybody, it's a nice place now, but you can imagine what Texas A&M, what College Station looked like in 1950. You've been to West Texas?
The tumbleweed.
Yes, exactly.
Battlesnakes.
That's what the place was. And there were no girls. So you
no
know,
girls?
No.
Was
no.
it boys' school?
Yeah, it was a military school.
Oh, come on.
Every class you went to, you were in military uniform. I knew a bunch of guys.
That might as well be Siberia without women.
Well, that's what colleges used to be. You know, when I see what goes on, I've got a niece that goes to Providence now. She's a junior, and she's a biology major. I didn't go up back to Providence until the day that Rick Pitino took the job, and there was some sort of NCAA sub-regional March Madness there.
Right.
And I said, I think I'll walk up. See, it was a reform school when I went there. It had no room, no buildings, no nothing.
No wonder you turned out the way you did.
Yes,
look
exactly.
At you. You were
exactly.
Impressed.
I go up there and they've got a new hockey arena. They own the top of the hill. You know.
Well, you at Providence, you must have gotten razzed a lot because you weren't brown, right? I mean, was that part of the gig when you were in college in the 50s, 60s?
Well, like who told him I didn't go to Brown? You went to school in Providence, Brown? Well, I don't correct them. If they want to think I'm from the Ivy League, fine.
But at that point, though, they were the stepsister to Brown, and I guess now there, Brown's still Brown, but, I mean, Providence is a much bigger school now, correct?
Well, they let girls in. See, there were
which I think's a great move.
1,700 guys there when I went there, and on Friday afternoon, I only had 1 year of SADD classes. Can you imagine that? How many kids would go to a college that had SADD classes? But we had them until noontime on Saturday. And then after the first year, now it was 5 days. When they did the 3 o'clock bell on Friday afternoon, you should have... Guys were running out of there. If they didn't have a car, they were running. You know, cars and trucks. And it's the type of place where you bring your car back to campus, you pass your keys in. You don't, you know, you don't use your car during the week and things like that.
You didn't need to.
No, of course.
There was nowhere to go.
Nobody had any money. Yeah, you know, in the whole bit. And now I go walking up there the day Rick Pitino takes the job.
And he's about 82, 83, 84 in there somewhere.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
And the 1 year that the one thing that happened when it reminds me of Loyola College. When I was coaching over at Loyola College, and one of my girls was going there. What they used to do at Loyola is announce they're building a new building. They would put a shovel into the ground, turn the dirt over, and nothing would happen. 3 years later, they'd do it again. Well, when I was coaching there and she was going there, finally they got going on the student center. So you spent the last couple of years stepping over cinder blocks and piles of stuff. It's not like going to school. But, you know, at Providence, you know, they didn't have the money to do this. They stayed within their budget and things like that. But it made college wasn't this marvelous time of life. It's something you went through. It's like training. My brother Bill once said he went to Zavarian Brothers, all boys, went to Notre Dame, then he was in the Marine Corps. And like he said, I've been training all my life, but I don't know what I'm training for. It's like boot camp over and over and over.
But if you don't make college more palatable, the next guy down the block
says,
we've got girls. And the next guy down the block says, we have a beautiful student center. The next place says, we have air conditioned.
Yeah,
then all of a sudden, you're not going to go to boot camp. No one chooses the tough life. Not nuts.
Judge Rogers down the paper. He was running his kid around, very smart kid, and looking at Ivy Leagues. And Judge went to Williams, and he looked down south, Duke, and places like this, and finally says, okay, I think his name was Adam, where do you want to go? And he mentioned Duke or somebody or other. He says, geez, I was sort of hoping you'd want to go to Williams. Well, Williams is in Williamstown, Massachusetts, way out in the middle of nowhere. And the kid says, it doesn't have anything. And Judge said, what do you mean it doesn't have anything? It had exactly what it had when Judge was going there in the 60s, you know, which was sort of dull and this, that, you know, and that's not
tall
what...
Tall trees.
Yeah, that's not what kids are looking for nowadays.
Of course not. Phil Jackman in studio, formerly of the Evening Sun. We're talking about love and hope and sex and dreams. I think where we left off before the last break was the Sun paper's coverage currently of sports, and you say that you spend 10% of the 100% of time that you have reading sports, you said? Maybe?
Yeah.
What about at this point in your life, I mean, having been everywhere, done everything, and been close to it, is it part of being close to it that makes you not want to be closer to it?
No, it's having gone through all this, and like you say, I used to read 7 newspapers a day, and when I'd sit down and analyze it, a lot of the times I was reading the same story 7 different ways or 7 different times. You know,
well, that's why the need for columnists is there, yeah. Phil. I mean, when I don't need to read the Sun paper when I can just go online and get my scores and get my statistics and get my agate. The reason I pick up a newspaper is to get an opinion, and this paper doesn't give me that, and that's unfortunate.
Well, you mentioned Mike Preston. I stat Mike every day, and as soon as I know where he's going, I don't have to read. I've known Mike as long as he's been in newspapers, and I like him, and he does a good job. And rarely do I have to go to the end to know where Mike is going. And if I don't have any idea where he's going, I'll finish the thing. But for the most part, you know, after a while, you can look at a story, and I know where this is going. All right, I've seen the guy's opinion and things like that. Now, for instance, the woman wrote a story about that Phelps, the swimming kid.
I
read that whole thing because I haven't read a Phelps story in maybe 2 years. You know, when he was at the Olympics.
You're just looking to get an update.
Huh?
You're just looking to get an update.
Yeah. What's he up to now? I know he's turned pro and things like that. But, you know, I'm not trying to skip through the thing. But then if you look at the paper, it's all little type anyway. And, you know, you have to get the magnify. But this thing, you know,
Why would the Hood-Wilson women's college basketball game, why would there be a full box on that? The attendance was 145.
It's local.
That's what they call it. They call the attendance 145.
Well, it's estimated.
Of course it's estimated.
17.
Why would that take precedence over
somebody said,
anything in this newspaper?
You know, at one time in the 60s, any Tom, Dick, or Harry could show up at the back door at the Sun with a box score for an amateur sports baseball game.
Beer league softball,
that day,
right.
And we'd run it. And then if you remember what Sunday Frank Lynch used to write that column on the New American, Pinformation.
Pinformation, yes. I remember that.
All you had to do is put up whatever it cost to roll a string and throw the ball down the alley, call the News American, and you'd be in the paper. So, but that's what we used to cover, which was...
Pinformation.
This is what you have to do when you're working in a town like... Chillicothe, Ohio, or something like that. But usually in a major metropolitan newspaper, you really don't have a chance to run all that.
Raise 153 at Pinland Dundalk last weekend. You're saying that doesn't belong in the Sun?
I used to love it when a guy would call up and say, I got a hole in one. And you say, and you shoot him down immediately and say, so what? You know, and I wouldn't take the information until he went, unless he went back to the clubhouse and bought around. You know, that's what you're supposed to do when you score a hole in one. He said, the guy says to me, I didn't know that. I said, who are you playing with? You know, and now he is playing alone, but he makes up three names. And I said, well, you better call those guys and tell them. You know, because he'd give me a, you know, it's a 110-yard hole, and I used a 2-iron.
Says, for you growing up in Massachusetts and seeing this city for the last 35 years, what is it about Baltimore that makes high school sports so insignificant to the mass populace? And you've been here through a poly program that Augie Weibel put out over there that was just, you know, as good as any. The Dunbar program at Bob Wade that for, you know, a dozen years.
The Baltimore All-Stars.
Exactly. Okay. But they were teams that had some national notoriety and sent players on to some good things. What is it about Baltimore that people call me all the time, won't you a high school show? Because nobody listened to it. And the reason nobody listened to it is because nobody sees these kids play. They're never on TV. The crowd at most of these games is about 145. Even in the heyday of Dunbar, they played downtown where, I mean, let's call it what it is. White people didn't go to watch Dunbar play. And basically, if you got 30 seconds of their highlights, I'm talking about Reggie Williams, Muggsy Bogues, they didn't play at the arena or at the Towson Center for the most part. They played against Walbrook at Walbrook. And nobody went to Walbrook in 1984 at 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night to watch a basketball game. So most people hadn't seen Muggsy Bogues. But I remember going to see Sam Cassell play against Southern down at Dunbar. And I walked into the room, and it was... I was the only white guy. Me and Keith Mills were the only people that were there. And I'm thinking to myself, this is a phenomenal game.
Yeah.
You know, Ron Lucas is playing, went off and played at Kansas State, wherever he went. And Sam Cassell's now been in the NBA a dozen years, won championships. Nobody saw these kids play. So to do a show about whether Sam Cassell could have had a good crossover dribble or whether he abused the officials, which he did, and whether Pompey put up with it, which he did, there's no conversation about it because no one sees it happen. And I think that's the unfortunate thing, that nobody watches these kids play, so therefore there's nothing to talk about.
Well, sports fall into different categories. A lot of sports are participation sports. You know, you ask John McEnroe or Jimmy Connors how much tennis television they watch, and they say, are you kidding me? Because they'd rather be playing. If you're a runner, you don't want to read about it. You know, you'd love to run the Boston Marathon. You don't want to read about it, really. You know, not more than a paragraph or two. What you were talking about, I first heard the name Skip Wise, and I said, he's that good. This is from a referee friend. And he says, yeah, there's a pretty good game Friday. And it was Loyola was going down to play at Dunbar. And Loyola had a heck of a guy who went up to Penn State and had a good career. I forget what his name was. But the game is, I think Loyola is 2 to 4 points ahead, starting the fourth quarter. And Skip Wise has Larry Gibson with him and a couple other guys. And Honey Dip, or whatever they used to call him, in the first 4 minutes of the last quarter, and they played 8-minute quarters. I don't know what they play nowadays. Is that what high school basketball
like
is?
Tens now.
Ten, four tens?
Tens or twelves. They might be 12. No.
It's probably
been that long since I've seen
it. Probably 4-8. But in 4 minutes, he got 16 points. I've never seen anything like it. So I go back, and I'm writing about, you know, I don't care what Dickie Kelly does, and, you know, you can give me all this. There's nobody in the country that's better than this kid. Well, anyway, he ends up going down to Clemson. The next time I saw him play two or three times, and in the famous game downtown, Adrian Dantley, They beat DeMather 89-81 or something like that. I think Skip got 40 then. But he goes down to Clemson, and as a freshman, and this never happened ever, he ruled the ACC as a freshman. You know, point guard coming down. He was just like Oscar Robertson was. I can imagine Oscar Robertson at Christmas Addicts High School in Indianapolis. I mean, this guy was so fantastic or something or other. And the first game I go to is a big referee. I know you know Bob somebody or other. Bob.
Go ahead.
And as he's going by, out of the, you know, he takes the whistle out and out of the corner of his mouth saying, "What are you doing here? Because I'm only the only white guy." Well, they just didn't go down there. What's going to happen to you? You know, but the word gets passed around. But to answer the question about how big why is high school such a big deal? And if you talk to some coaches, they don't think they get enough or something or other. But this is, the parents and friends are interested. And I always thought, until I got back into coaching, that kids in the school were interested. Come to find out they're not. You know, at a school that we both know that has more than 2,000 kids, you go to a football game, and I don't care how bad or how good the team is, you know, there won't
be... Well, most of the kids in school come to razz the kids to play on the team, not
Well, that's okay,
them.
As long as they come and do... But nobody shows up. And, you know, this foolishness of... You know, you drive around, and you see all these athletic facilities at most high schools, certainly out in the county, are about four times as impressive as the academic building. You drive by on a Saturday afternoon, and the field's empty. Nobody ever plays on Saturday. Don't they know that football is an afternoon game on Saturday? Well, something happened way back when, and they hide city games. City games are played at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on Thursday. They don't want anybody to show up. Because somebody's carrying a Roscoe and there's big fights and all this other business. You know, I think they should get back onto the Friday night and the Saturday afternoon. That's when high school football should be played.
I remember when Kevin Byrne came here from Cleveland. You know, he would always ask me, you know, with the Ravens. He said, "What's going on around here? Like, you know, why is high school football not a big deal?" Because in Ohio, Friday night, nobody would do anything. If you live in Perry Hall, you go to the Perry Hall game. Well, in Towson, you go to Towson or Delaney or Calvert Hall. That's where you go.
It got so big. This is how it is in the Midwest. Detroit, Columbus, Cleveland,
Texas, forget
you name
it. Right.
And all that. To protect themselves, the high schools played on Friday night. Because Saturday is given to college football and Sunday is given to the pros. So, you know, they sort of got pushed off the Saturday because, you know, Ohio has a million... Mid-America Conference, there's about six or seven schools, and they're good. You know, the Bowling Greens, Miami, and of course,
Ohio.
Saturday is the Buckeyes, you know, and everybody lives in, you know, that's a religion.
Phil Jackman in studio, formerly of the Evening Sun. We will take some phone calls next hour, 481-1570. We had a couple of phone callers call in here, but we're rolling right now. We have time to slow down. Ray is here, and Phil is here. We'll step out. We'll take a break. Phil doesn't think he's getting anything, but we're going to give him dinner for two over at Della Rose's and up at Looney's Pub up in Bel Air, since he's a Northeast guy. Hey, I got my own applause here. I don't need your applause. I got my own applause. Back for more of the Budweiser Sports Forum with WNST right after this.